This morning we'll be discussing texts 10, 11, and 12 from Canto 3, Chapter 8. The title of the chapter is Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu. The speaker is Maitreya. The person who is hearing from him is Vidura. And yesterday we reviewed the first verses of this chapter where Vidura has completed a whole long chapter full of questions that take a few cantos to answer. They're really pithy, very powerful questions. And they're all in relation to Vasudeva, or Krishna. As is the subject matter of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, Param Satyam Dhimahi, it's meditation on, or exposition on, the Absolute Truth. Absolute truth meaning that from which everything comes. So that the subject matter is about Krishna. He is that person from whom everything comes. And all the questions of Vidura to Maitreya are in relation to Krishna and his position. So, as mentioned yesterday, part of the series of questions asked by Vidura is in relation to basically how does the Lord do it? How does he bring this creation into being? Which to some people isn't very interesting. It's like too technical and forget it, just let's go to the pastimes of Krishna. But how are we going to properly understand the pastimes of Krishna if we don't understand Krishna? It'll look to us like one of us doing something when it's not, it's the opposite. We are reflections of, we are created in the image of. He was fully transcendental, the living entities in the conditioned state. Although the soul is transcendental, they're contaminated. So right away, when we're hearing these next three verses, this morning's verses, immediately the position of the personality of Godhead from whom everything comes, it's immediately stated that he's in this position where it's different. The modes of nature are not acting, the laws of karma are not acting. He's the rest and support of everything, yet he is not moved by or contaminated by or under the influence of the modes of nature or anything of this world, and yet everything comes from him. It's difficult for the conditioned mind to grasp that. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge, Krishna declares to Arjuna in the beginning, I'm going to now describe to you something that's the most confidential part of all wisdom. Envious people cannot understand it. One has to be faithful, then that's a requirement for understanding. Right away, this confidential understanding is what's being shared here. While Krishna is the source of everything, he's separate. Although nothing is separate from him, because he's the source of everything, so meaning the oneness relationship is that because everything comes from him, it's not different than him. then he says, and yet I'm separate from it. So it sounds like double talk. Which is it? Is he same as or is he different from? And he's, the answer he gives, the presentation he's giving, is he's simultaneously both. And then he gives the clue, is by his mystic opulence. Yogam Aishwaryam. Aishwarya, opulence. Yogam Aishwaryam, his mystic opulence. The energy and the energetic are inseparable, but the energy is not the energetic. And the abode of the energetic is free from the modes of nature. The energy has the modes of nature, active, and time is active. So we're going to hear these things. The purpose is not to like have your mind spin or have you just scratching your head. The purpose is to understand the object, Krishna. And we start to understand the object by understanding this realm. Going back, the questions are in relation to Vasudeva, Krishna. The topic of creation has to do with understanding Krishna. That's why it's of interest. That's why it's in the Bhagavatam. And, as mentioned yesterday, quoting Sariputta, the way that we view the world has a profound effect on how we view ourselves. Stated very simply, if we do not, in material consciousness, if we do not see the relationship of all things with the Supreme, then it's up for grabs. We can make it ours. Whether it's an individual or a group of individuals or a nation, this land is my land, this land is your land, you know, like nationalism or any other ism that drives people to live material life. If we don't see the relation of all things in this world in which we live, in relation to the Supreme. We are captured by Maya, and then there's no hope of understanding God. It's such a simple thing. It's such a fundamental, simple thing. Again, just referring to this very nice discussion that a professor from South Africa, whose name is escaping me right now, nice, pious man, he understood it. And Prabhupada was very pleased that he understood it, that the culture, he was concerned and openly expressing his concern that the culture previously was religious-based and now has become material-based, and people just have lost interest in the soul. Inquiring about the soul, Brahma Jigyasa. He didn't use the Sanskrit terms, but. And as a result, God is lost, and as a result, morality and, you know, it's rapid degradation and so many problems that the government just gets consumed with putting out fires because people have lost their spiritual connection. No, it's solving problems by stopping problems before they're problems. By awakening transcendental knowledge. If one doesn't understand the soul and God, then the default mode is material existence, which is unbearable. It's fraught with unsolvable problems. Not just a matter of adjusting things infinite number of times and ways, and it becomes nice. It's inherently problematic. It's fraught with problems. So the solution is to go back to the root. example Prabhupada gives of in mathematical calculation. Long. Supposing you make all the calculations wrong, right except for the first one. Every subsequent calculation is wrong. You have to go back to the first one. So, who are we? And where does everything come from? It's not just a philosophical, you know, useless exercise. It's very practical. The way that we view the world has a profound effect on how we view ourselves. So we're going to speak about Krishna. One of the things that we need to speak about is the world in which we live. And so that it's not just blind faith and sentiment. Blind faith and sentiment is not substantial. What one will find, as in our modern situation, even in the name of religion and belief in God, people are clueless about the soul and God. And as a result, in the name of religion, so many atrocious things take place. With full faith that this is godly. I mean, just how everyday people live without compassion, cutting the throats of other living beings to make them your food, for example. It's just, and that's religion. And there's the, like, a religion based upon it, of making kosher meat and making whatever they call it, meat in the Islamic religion and so forth. You know, it's just in the name of religion. So, what to speak of then, understanding God, and without that, the default mode prevails, Maya, the kingdom of God without God. So it's important that all of this is to say, this little discussion, while it's a little technical, it's important. It takes away the blindness and the unguided sentiment part. It makes it very clear. This is how the show of illusion goes on. Listen carefully, because there's some elements that are, we don't see, but they're ruling. It's like a rope around your neck that's pulling you here and there, and you don't see it, but it's pulling you here and there. And one of the ropes that's being mentioned here is time. So, that's the preview. Here's the subject. Text 10. We heard about Parashur Muni speaking to Maitreya in disciplic succession, etc. And Maitreya is now going to repeat what he heard in disciplic succession. From Sankarshan to the Kumaras to Sankhyayana Muni to Parashur Muni and Brihaspati, and Parashur Muni spoke to Maitreya upon the request of Palashti Muni. So Maitreya, this is disciplic succession understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam before it was written, before it was in a written form by Vyas. It existed in a sound vibration form, passed on through chain of spiritual masters. So text 10. At that time when the three worlds were submerged in water, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu was alone lying on his bedstead, the great snake Ananta. And although he, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, appeared to be in slumber, in his own internal potency, free from the action of the external energy, his eyes were not completely closed. That's picture the scene, and more importantly, pick up on the details. because the details are important to have a clear picture of the scene. Commonly in relation to Mahavishnu, this is Garbhadakshini Vishnu, but Mahavishnu is said to lie down on the causal ocean, and he's in the condition of yoga nidra. Nidra means sleep. And when we sleep, you know, we're out. When the Lord is engaged in his pastime of yoga nidra, he's not out. It's a pastime. There's one distinction between us and the source of us, the source of this, all of this creation. So he's engaged, he appears to be in slumber, but he's engaged in his own internal potency. In the Sanskrit is sva, atma, ratau, enjoying his internal potency. In the language of Brahma, samhita, it's Mahavishnu is enjoying with his internal potency, Rama, Devi. So Rama, Devi, is like Sita unto Ram, or Lakshmi unto Narayan, or Radha unto Krishna. But Vishnu has his internal potency, and his internal potency is Rama, Devi. And he's enjoying pastimes with Rama, Devi. They're not the same as the internal potency, Radha, and her pastimes with Krishna. Although Rama, Devi, as is Lakshmi, as is all the other goddesses of fortune or expansions of the Supreme Lord, they're expansions of Radha. But the pastimes are different because the personality, the manifestation of the Supreme Lord is different. So in any case, his pastime is, the detail is not described, but he's enjoying pastimes with Rama Devi in this state of mystic slumber. So then it's said that his eyes are Adishayana. He's lying down on Anantashesh, and his eyes are not closed. Amita drik yamilayat. So they're slightly opened. That was discussed, that was mentioned before in the verses that we read, when the Kumaras came to hear from him. They didn't like tap him on the shoulder or ring a bell or something. They just began reciting beautiful prayers, glorifying him. And he knew what their intention was, and so he opened his eyes further. And the jewel on his head began to glow, and he then began to speak what we're hearing. The idea is, we're getting to hear what existed before we existed. And we won't have an opportunity to know what existed before we existed unless it's disclosed by one who existed before we existed, and that's Sankarshan, the Supreme Lord. So he's describing this to the Kumaras. And the scene is not the total dissolution, it's the end of each day of Brahma dissolution, the partial dissolution. And it's different. They're both dissolutions. But one is where everything is completely wound up, and the other is where everything is held in a suspended state during the night of Brahma. That's the scene. And Krita Kshana Niritaha. engaged krita kshana. Kshana means like each moment. His time was being engaged free from the influence of the modes of nature, and free from the influence of time. He's situated in the eternal time, and he's situated beyond the modes of nature. That's the picture. That's, so we don't know what that is. It's outside of our experience, but we should understand it's outside of our experience. It's not like one of us, because we're not free from the modes of nature. We're not free from the influence of time. Our sleep is not, you know, a pastime. we're covered by ignorance during sleep, and the constitutional activity of the soul is very much dormant. That is service, conscious service to the Supreme. So, next verse. Just like the strength of fire within fuel wood.
Here's a table.
It's made of wood. Inside, there's fire.
It doesn't feel hot. And I don't see the fire, but there's fire. It's stored.
That's the Vedic way of understanding how the elements mix. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. There's fire inside. Proof, bring some fire, bring a match or some fire to the wood and the fire will come out. It's just stored very compactly, subtly. Because fire is more subtle than earth, so it's within the earth, it's stored. Not all earth has, anyway. Just like the strength of fire within fuel wood, the Lord remained within the water of dissolution, submerging all the living entities in their subtle bodies. He lay in the self-invigorated energy called Kala. What was that about? What did he just say? Purport. After the three worlds, upper, lower, and middle planetary systems, merged into the water of dissolution, this is the partial devastation, the water of dissolution, the living entities of all the three worlds remained in their subtle bodies by dint of the energy called Kala. Kala means time. So, time is, that we hear about in the next verse too. Time is really important. If you're going to have creation, you got to have time. If you don't have time, you don't have creation. It's irreplaceable. Please note, time in the spiritual world is conspicuous by its absence. So wherever there's time, as we know it, at least, because there is eternal time, but because things don't come here without having their spiritual counterpart, there's eternal time. The time as we know it is past, present, future kind of thing. Like, you know, here we are assembled for Bhagavatam class. Before we were somewhere else, and then afterwards we're going to be somewhere else. And you don't have that without time, past, present, future. So in the ocean of dissolution, time is present. In the ocean of dissolution, the modes of nature are dormant. And I'm going to read a little bit further about this, just a moment. I'm going to need to take a break and use the restroom if I can just shut off the recording. I'll be right back. The description is taking us to the water of dissolution, the abode of Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. Garbhadakshayi Vishnu is an expansion of Mahavishnu. In one sense, they're not different. The difference is in terms of function, but that's one entity, Vishnu. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, Shiradakshayi Vishnu, they're all Vishnu. They're not just Vishnu Tattva, they're all Vishnu. And they have a function in relation to creation. So, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu is specifically mentioned in text 10. He is lying on this ocean of dissolution where Kala is there, time energy is there, because before, at the time of total annihilation, the time energy is withdrawn. To have creation again, Mahavishnu glances and the time energy is injected. So for the whole duration of the universe, the created manifestation, time is there and then time is withdrawn. But during the partial dissolution, time is there because you have to have time for events. So this is just one of the events in the cycle of the universe. There's the partial devastation event. And the living entities, they're in this state of susupti. Susupti means it's a state of consciousness where it's like anesthesia. Like anesthesiologists, they know how to put people, they say, put them to sleep. So there's one euphemism where animals are killed and they say, put them to sleep. It's not that kind of put them to sleep. It's anesthetized, like what happens during surgery. I don't know if anybody has had surgery. I had one surgery. Not a surgery, a procedure. And something that I experienced was that there's no sense of time. Meaning, when you're ready, you got your IV tube and they say, okay, now count backwards from 10. 10, 9. They know that you're gone when you stop counting. And then what I remember was when I woke up, I was in the same place with the tube in my arm, and I said, okay, well, when are they going to do this procedure? Then I looked at the clock, and it was 2 or 3 hours had passed, but there was no sense of passage of time. When you're sleeping, there's a sense of passage of time. But when you're under anesthesia, there's no sense of time. Prithushrava Prabhu had some kind of a lump in his throat. It wasn't cancerous, but it was a lump in his throat. And he was trying for a long time to try natural ways to get it to go away. It didn't go away. He finally had surgery. Surgery, so anesthesia, the thing was removed, and he they removed it. Then when he started coming out of anesthesia, there was some coughing, and they were concerned, so they gave him more anesthesia. He was out for 24 hours, and he said it was the same thing. It was like, okay, when are they going to do this thing? When he came out of anesthesia, because it was numbed, so he didn't feel the pain yet, where the incision was gone in. But anyway, my point is, time acts in different ways. And when one is in this condition of partial dissolution, it's the deep sleep kind. You're not aware of the passage of time. That's consciousness, but time is present because there's activity. Because without time, you don't have activity. So it's just a phase of time where everything is suspended. Consciousness is in this deep sleep state, susupti state. And the soul is also there, and the subtle body is also there. Specifically, it's described. The subtle body is, the gross body is kaput, it's finished, but the subtle body is there. It's just not active because of the particular influence of time. And then the next verse says, and then time goes tick, 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 and then it's time for activity again. You know, from the dissolution stage to the manifest stage. Tick, tick. So by influence of time, the dissolution comes to the manifestation period or stage. Here's the verse. Text 12. The Lord lay down for 4,000 yuga cycles in his internal potency, and by his external energy, he appeared to be sleeping within the water. That's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then there's Krishna. So Krishna appears something, something, something to those that are in material consciousness. It appears something, something, but one should understand it's his internal potency is always active, and the external potency, by his external potency, appeared to be sleeping within the water. When the living entities were coming out for further development of their fruitive activities, actuated by the energy called Kala Shakti, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu saw his transcendental body as bluish. So the main part of the purport is describing the time energy. Really important. Purport. In the Vishnu Purana, Kala Shakti, that's the time energy, Kala Shakti is time energy, is mentioned as avidya. What's avidya? Ignorance. Vishnu Purana, it is mentioned that Kala Shakti equals ignorance. Next sentence. The symptom of the influence of Kala Shakti is that one has to work in the material world for fruitive results. Just as we can't stop time, who can stop time? Nobody can stop time. As you can't stop time, the influence of time is manifest in this world as the inclination for fruitive work. Whoa! We're strapped onto a conveyor belt that doesn't end. And it's all about this variety or that variety of fruitive work, like how I can enjoy the fruits of my work. So remember the class that I gave the first evening? That very verse where Krishna says you're entitled to your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of your work. Wow. Like, you know, that's timelessness. To get to that position, one can experience eternality. One can experience the soul. It's liberating. It's freedom. But people are afraid of, well, if I don't have fruitive results, then where's my happiness? Because they bought into the paradigm that says that's where happiness is. And we're strapped on. go. Even we say philosophically, oh, that sounds right. We bought into the program. And that's the only program. You don't have other software. It's just that one. The fruit of activities program. And then, so time is acting. And whether we do it this way or we do it that way, or however many combinations and permutations and mutations and adjustments, we're strapped on to fruitive activity. And so we go into the realm of devotional service, and it's fruitive activity. I mean, the consciousness that we carry is, I'm at the center. I'm supposed to be the enjoyer. That's how I value and evaluate the whole devotional service program is, am I enjoying? Like that bumper sticker, are we having fun yet? Because that's the criteria. It's about me. I'm at the center. Even it's the arena or the realm is devotional service, where it's about Krishna, not about us. He's at the center. So we want to stay in the center and call it devotional service. So we're not going to experience freedom. We're not going to experience timelessness. We're not going to experience transcendence. We'll experience another version of fruitive activity, where time is pushing us along the conveyor belt of continued illusion and continued fruitive activity. So it's not an option. It's imperative that we disconnect from that anticipation of enjoyment through fruitive activity that's being moved. The prompt, the initial prompt, is time. And time energy acts upon those who have an attitude toward Krishna, that he's the enjoyer and I want to be the enjoyer. It's envy of Krishna. So the time energy acts. It gives us this situation where we can try fruitive activity out for millions of lifetimes and see if, how we can get it together so that we become happy. And it's the wrong program. The fruitive workers are described in Bhagavad Gita as mudhas, or foolish. Such foolish living entities are very enthusiastic to work for some temporary benefit within perpetual bondage. One thinks himself very clever throughout his life if he is able to leave behind him a great asset of wealth for his children. And to achieve this temporary benefit, he takes the risk of all sinful activities without knowledge that such activities will keep him perpetually bound by the shackles of material bondage. Due to his polluted mentality and due to material sins, the aggregate combination of living entities appeared to be bluish. Tamas, darkness, fruitive activity, avidya, bluish. Last sentence, such an impetus of activity for fruitive result is made possible by the dictation of the external energy of the Lord, Kala. Though in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks very little about Kala, but one of the places he speaks about it is Kalosmi, time I am, the destroyer of all things. So the mode of ignorance is destructive. Now, fruitive activities sounds like creating, not destroying. Like, we do something, go out and make a living, economic development, build something, make something, own something, control something, mode of passion. Don't have any of that without time. And so intrinsic to fruitive to passion is a strong dose of ignorance. And when it manifests, it starts out red, but it turns blue. It starts out passionate, but kamesha, krodesha. Rajoguna samudbhava, in Krishna's language of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna wants to know, why is it that one is impelled to do something, even you decide not to do that something? It's as if we're forced. Why does it happen? We decide, I don't want to do something, it's not good. I don't want to become angry. Or I don't want to hurt somebody. I don't want to speak harshly, or something. I don't want to, whatever it is that's something you don't want to do. Because I know it's not good. Not good for me, it's not good for others, it's not good. Why do you do it? Contact with the mode of passion later turns to the mode of ignorance, wrath, tamas. It's driven behind the fruit of activity. It's avidya. It's not, the promise is happiness and the result is misery. Well, let's do that one again. The promise is happiness and again it's misery. And like a donkey, we just keep doing it. The promise is happiness and we get misery. We just keep doing it, like rerun. That's ignorance. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. Bringing the senses in contact with sense objects, expecting bhoga, happiness. Dukha yonaya evate. I remember speaking about this last time I was here. Remember the Jack in the Box example. Again and again, just like children, just foolish. And driving the whole machine is time. So now we'll go back to the dissolution state. The time energy is there. But the gross bodies aren't manifest, just the subtle bodies are there, with living entities with desires that are dormant. Because that's the influence of time also. Where do desires come from? The desire that we have today, where does it come from? And the answer is found in the Bhagavatam. It comes from activities previously performed, fruit of activities previously performed that form an impression, a sense impression. And it's stored very, very compactly, better than Microsoft ever could figure out. It's stored and subtly within the mind. And doop 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 doop, time passes, tick tick tick, tick tick tick, it's still stored. Like a seed. How long can a seed stay a seed? Long time. And when the conditions are right, that is to say, when the has come the time, then that seed fructifies and it comes out as a desire. It's all time energy is under Krishna's direction. How long seeds stay as seeds. You know, like when the duration of time of our life is over, the soul leaves the body. Time is making that happen, and then the soul is transferred to another womb of the next mother, which mother, father, dependent upon the previous guna and karma. You know, that's all that stored stuff. That you can't see. You can't see time either. It's stored into the machine, keeps moving things along. And then the child is conceived, and then gestation, and the child is born. Or sometimes the child isn't born by the influence of time. Something is destroyed instead of created. Time is invisible. And then it's, you know, at a certain stage, you know, the child comes out of the womb, and after some stage, puberty comes, and you know the clock is ticking, and then stuff starts to happen. Stored desires come out. You know, where'd that come from? It's something that was previously done. It's a rerun, cycling and recycling, and by the influence of the time energy, it's remote control. to Krishna's time energy. And here, in this purport, Prabhupada is equating time energy with the external energy. Because it appears in that verse I quoted from Bhagavad Gita, Kalosmi, that's Krishna. Time I am. So that sounds like Krishna is time and time is Krishna. You know, that they're interchangeable. However, here it's the application of time is the time energy within the material world, so it's the dictation of the external energy of the Lord Kala. So the external energy acts as the instrument of Krishna, although Krishna doesn't have to do anything. His external energy is doing, and time energy is moving the external energy. Just one other, I spent some time this morning researching this. You know, from that big poster that shows the material world, then the spiritual world, it has all those like little detailed notes along the side of the poster. Next time you see one of those, look closely, and you'll see the dividing line between the spiritual and material world. It speaks of, it's again a one-to-one correlation between the causal ocean, because the universes are floating in the causal ocean, and it also speaks of the causal ocean and the river Viraja as the same. So I found that, when I noticed that, I found it puzzling, because I had this understanding, which isn't wrong, but the understanding of the river Viraja is the dividing place between the spiritual and material world. And it's a nice, I've thought about that many times. We're here, and then there's the spiritual world. What's it like, you know, at that point of juncture between the spiritual and the material world? And the answer is, it's the river Viraja. Okay. On this side, it's like a river. On this side is the material, on that side is the spiritual. And this is the dividing, like a buffer zone. No man's land. Neither here nor there. And to confirm, Prabhupada has said, Buddhists, if they become perfect, enter into the river Viraja, but they're neither here nor there. Their whole program is nihilism. I mean, I was with some Chinese students recently, and they had some familiarity with Buddhism. Of course, there are different schools of Buddhism, just like there are different schools of Christianity and whatever you want to call Hinduism, the different schools of Buddhism. But common, universally common, is what's the goal? Nirvana. What's nirvana? Nothingness. That's the goal. Because the somethingness is troublesome. I want nothingness. I don't want troublesome. There's no statement of positive. It's just not this. Nothingness. Nirvana. So that's, Prabhupada has said, the destination of Buddhists, if they become perfect, is the river Viraja. Neither here nor there. Nothingness. Now, another statement that Prabhupada made is there's no such thing as nothingness. Because he said there are two things. There's God and that which has come from God, and there's no third thing. There's God and there's gods, and there's not a third thing. There's no void in the creation of God, because void means nothing. Even the river Viraja, there's something. But but it's, there's no apparent manifestation of something, not the spiritual something or the material something. But it's here we're getting a description of what that is. It's the causal ocean, or the ocean of dissolution in the language here. And what's there? It's the time energy. Let me read two references from Madhyamika. One is Lord Chaitanya speaking to Rupa Goswami and describing devotional service. And he's describing the creeper of bhakti that one receives by the mercy of a spiritual master. One receives the bhakti lata beach, and here's the verse. As one waters the bhakti lata bija, the seed sprouts, and the creeper gradually grows to the point where it penetrates the walls of this universe and goes beyond the river Viraja, lying between the spiritual world and the material world. It attains Brahmaloka, or the Brahman effulgence, and penetrating through that stratum, it reaches the spiritual sky and the spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan. So we're familiar with that description. Here's the purport. A creeper generally takes shelter of a big tree, but the bhakti lata, being the creeper of spiritual energy, cannot take shelter of any material planet, for there is no tree on any material planet that the bhakti creeper can utilize for shelter. In other words, devotional service cannot be utilized for some material purpose. Devotional service is meant only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no furtive activity. Material purpose can't take shelter there. Sometimes men with a poor fund of knowledge maintain that bhakti can be applied to material things also. In other words, they say that devotional service can be rendered to one's country or to the demigods, but this is not a fact. Devotional service is meant especially for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is beyond the material, this material range. Now, there is a river or causal ocean. There's a river, karma, or causal ocean, karma, between the spiritual and material natures. And this river is free from the influence of the three material modes of nature. Therefore, it is called viraja. The prefix vi, vi, means vigata, or completely eradicated. And rajas means the influence of the material world. Viraja, without the influence of the material world, without the influence of the modes of nature. On this platform, a living entity is completely free from material entanglement. That's in this viraja position. Free from material entanglement, but at least a partial dissolution. The subtle body is still there, which means the desires are still there in a dormant state, but the time energy is holding them in abeyance or suspended animation. Like that. For the jnanis who want to merge into Brahman effulgence, there is Brahmaloka. The bhakti vata, however, has no shelter in the material world, nor has it shelter in Brahmaloka, although Brahmaloka is beyond the material world. The bhakti vata grows until it reaches the spiritual sky where Goloka Vrindavan is situated. So the purpose of reading that is, like this poster, the causal ocean in which the universes are floating is where the time energy exists, but the modes of nature are not manifest because the time energy is holding them in abeyance. But when the time energy is ready to activate them, they become activated. And when they become activated, then the bodies start to form. So it's important for us to know how this machine is working that we're strapped onto, and how to get off the machine that we're strapped onto. Because if we don't know how to get off the machine we're strapped onto it. Endlessly. However, we may try to be clever and make adjustments and try it this way and go there and try something over there and like avoiding surrendering to Krishna kind of program. It's not going to happen. The happiness that we expect is not going to happen, and the time energy is going to keep us strapped on to the material program, and the modes of nature will act and our karma will act. Even we read Bhagavad Gita and chanted around, so it's going to continue. Now, one other reference. Beyond this material sky, further than we can see with our eyes, and beyond the sevenfold coverings of the universe, there is the causal ocean, in which the universes are all floating like footballs. And beyond the causal ocean, there is an unlimited span of spiritual sky, generally known as the effulgence of Brahman. Within this effulgence, there are innumerable spiritual planets, and so on. Now, speaking of Vaikuntha planets, these inhabitants are known as Maha Purushikas, or persons directly engaged in the service of the Lord. They are happy in those planets and are without any kind of misery. And they live perpetually in full youthfulness, enjoying life in full bliss and knowledge without fear of birth, death, old age, and disease, and without the influence of Kala, eternal time. So now we'll go back to this dividing place. So there's the material world, fruit of activities. There's this dividing place, the causal ocean, or the river Viraja, and on the other side is the spiritual sky, where time is conspicuous by its absence. But still people are doing activities. So that's mystery, it's a puzzle. What's an activity that time isn't active? We don't have the experience. We have the experience of time acting. We have the experience of fruit of activities. But who does something, what does it look like when you do something without a cause? Without a desire, a material desire. It's when there's spiritual desire, when there's pure spiritual desire, fruitive activities are absent, when selfish desires are gone, one is completely free and liberated and no misery, no modes of nature, no time, complete selflessness, complete harmony. Sounds really attractive. Why we can't get there? We're attached to our misery, or we're attached to the source of the misery. Not attached to the misery, we're attached to the source of the misery. Fruit of intention. I want to enjoy, and we don't want to let go of that because it's constitutional to the soul. I want to enjoy. How can that go of what's cut? So, the paradigm is wrong. It's the enjoyment is love, the happiness of the beloved. So any attempt to find happiness through love in this world is not love. It's I'm at the center. My happiness is, am I enjoying it? Are we having fun yet? It's about me. Addicted. So time keeps moving, fruit of activity keeps driving our activity, our existence. Well, we wish the realm of timelessness, of happiness that's unlimited, is accessible to us. Provided we let go of false ego, the selfish motivations, the misconceptions that bind us to illusion. I'll end with this. Does the name Purna Pragya mean anything to any of you, the devotee that did translations or summaries of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam? You know, I've known him. We've known each other since we joined the same summer, 1970, in Boston. He and his wife came. They were married when they came to Krishna consciousness. Narayani. Maybe you know Narayani. Has she come here? New Vrindavan. So they were married when they came to Krishna consciousness. And I saw him because I went to New York after Boston, and they went to Calcutta, and they became pujaris at the Calcutta temple, and then served in Mayapur, and then did so many things. So our lives hadn't crossed so much. So sometime a few years back, I saw him, and I was, wow, Hari Bol, Prabhu. And he said, you recognize me? Do you know who I am? I said, yeah, you're Purna Pragya. We joined the movement the same summer, 1970. He said, wow, you have a good memory. He said, how can I forget you and your wife? You're fantastic devotees. And, you know, it was some conversation. Let's have lunch together. So we had lunch, and he was sharing. After all of this intellectual academic work that he's done, he has now a little presentation that he feels he really wants to be in front of an audience and present this stuff. It starts with, you're not the body. He's convinced that if people can actually understand they're not the body and then practically live their life, that's the body part, with the understanding they're not the body, that's the key to transcendence. And conversely, without that, there isn't transcendence. It's a struggle. Daivyeshu gunamayi mama maya duratya. Mama eva prapadyante maya man etan srantite. So these basic things of who we really are and what are the forces that are binding us from understanding who we really are. You know, we can look like it's their fault, it's their fault, it's, you know, but it's our fault. Not time and the modes of nature and karma. It's our choices of trying to be enjoyers. We free will buys into the option that says I want to enjoy independently, and then the time energy acts, and we're bound. And the bondage isn't, there's no escape. You can't get out of prison. Climb over the wall or something. It doesn't work that way. It requires surrender to Krishna. Resume our constitutional position. So, you know, that's the simple method. But to help people, to help ourselves, and also to help people that, about surrender to Krishna. Why should I surrender to Krishna? Well, tomorrow evening, the topic that I've been asked to speak about in Virginia is why worship Krishna? Why worship only Krishna? So tendency to worship is there because it's of the soul. Why should I worship only Krishna? You're rebellious, the mode of goodness is kind of rebellious. I want to worship many things. I don't want to be discriminatory. I want to worship many things. So many ways to capture the soul in the field of material activity and repeated birth and death. So it's helpful forces that are acting upon us, how the whole thing works. Krishna is the source of everything. He's the source of our illusory existence. And he's the source of freedom from that illusory existence. And he's giving, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, means to become free from material existence. By knowing, in part, knowing what that material existence is. How does it work? Okay. Any discussion? Yes.
So the key thing which differentiates fruitive activity and devotional service is fruitive activity is for my pleasure and devotional service is for Krishna.
Yes.
So now
there's details that follow that, but yes. Like, okay, what's pleasing to Krishna? I can't do nonsense and say it's for Krishna. So it really must be pleasing to Krishna along with the consciousness of doing it for Krishna's pleasure.
So when I am on this path of devotional service, I realize there are a bunch of things which I do which look externally devotional, but inside consciousness, maybe for my own enjoyment,
sure.
And subtle things.
Sure.
So as I try to get out of those subtle things, sometimes my mind gives that logic, because I know this thing, this is a devotional, but I don't know how much component is my pleasure into it. Let's try the reverse one, where I know this, I don't like this thing. Let me try the thing which I don't like, but it is devotional. That doesn't work.
Yeah, I do. I do, definitely.
So, you know, I try something on which my own pleasure isn't. And that doesn't work because, you know, that's not my nature, it's troublesome, you know.
Fine.
That's not right to suffer myself and do devotional service. That's not right. So the line with which I'm living my life now is, oh, find out something which is inspiring for me.
Sure.
Bring in devotional service.
I've said that hundreds and hundreds of times. You've probably heard me say it a few times. Sure. It's in Bhakti Siddhanta's language, it's dovetail. I spoke about it. I like it. Oh, that's convenient. Krishna likes it too, so I'll do it and call it, it's for Krishna. But it's really, I like it. But there's also a component, Krishna likes it too. And then it's a little like Sakam Bhakti to transition to Nishkam Bhakti. Please understand two things that are necessary to transit from Sakam Bhakti to Nishkam Bhakti. One of them is obvious, and another one may be less obvious. The one that's obvious is, let me at least invest in the consciousness, that portion of I like it, for Krishna's pleasure. Direct consciousness to Krishna's pleasure while, you know, I'm driving pleasure. And it's part of the motivation. It's like an important part of the motivation. Let me invest consciousness in for Krishna's pleasure. That's the bhakti principle. And let me put energy there using Vaisheshika Prabhu's phrase, where attention goes, energy flows. It's like very catchy. And it's true. Withdraw consciousness over there, invest consciousness over here. Where attention goes, energy flows. So cultivate that. And don't beat yourself up because there's something over there too. Just invest over here. Cultivate. Anukulyena, Krishna Anushilana. Cultivate. Extra devotion. It's bhakti is a sort of cultivation. So you cultivate, like a garden. You cultivate. There's a bunch of weeds and there's the things you want, and you cultivate the things you want. Some weed pulling is also good, but you cultivate what you want. Second, and less obvious, but also very important, is the relationship one has with sadhu, besides, you know, my own program and my own activity. Sadhu. I'll say it in two different ways. one is Dhruva Maharaj. His gratitude to Narada for giving him the means to get Vishnu, which was the means to get his kingdom. Narada gave him the means. And he, although his motivation was 100% material, it was just not sakama bhakti, it's just sakama. But because Krishna was the object of the activity, sakama bhakti, the counterbalancing point was his gratitude to Narada. And as that gratitude to Narada became stronger and matured, that displaced the kama. So that's one way of describing the same thing. For the other example is, in Kapila Dev's description to Devahuti of how to transfer material attachment, or how to release oneself from material attachment, his answer is, the very same attachment applied to sadhu. Very same. It says, pick it up over here and apply it over here. Cultivate that. So, for Guru and Krishna, is to keep it real simple. Do what I do for Guru and Krishna. Knowing very well there's this other stuff that's going on. You know, my happiness is important to me. Gradually, that sense of my happiness is important to me is displaced, the darkness is displaced by light. The real happiness displaces this other sense of happiness. So it's organic. It just grows. Just keep nourishing that creeper by withdrawing and investing consciousness over here. Nasate vidite bhavo na bhavo vidite sataha. Withdraw from asat and place in sat. And cultivate like that. Gradually. So the faith goes to the process of bhakti and the object of the process of bhakti, and we're being purified as a result. And then when there is that purity, and with that purity comes some strength, purity is the force, I can borrow from that strength and go over to this other activity that I don't like, at least I don't like so much. And I can apply some of the strength to that thing that I don't like so much because I know it's going to be good for me. But and then I have the strength to do it, and the sense of purpose, and the sense that it works. Because what's really important is not whether I like it or not. What's really important is for Krishna. And if I can act on that principle, if there's the strength to act on that principle, then even the things I don't like, I can like. But I don't start there, I start with the things that I like. That which gives me enlivenment and happiness and enthusiasm, and I can go all day long just doing this thing. The other one, it's tough. Okay, so do the thing that you borrow from the position of strength to work where there's some need for strength. That happens as one matures in Krishna consciousness. So the two things, again, invest in the devotional component, the bhakti principle, that let me do this thing that I like to do. In cultivating the mood, let me do it for Krishna. Krishna's pleasure is found therein. And even the effort to do so is pleasing to Krishna. Even if it takes forever to get there, the effort to do so is pleasing to Krishna. That's the bhakti principle. And that diminishes the sakama influence.
And then when it really gets to the practical activities, for example, putting chairs in Rath Yatra, it's very difficult for me to connect to, how is it Krishna getting pleased by just my putting chairs in Rath Yatra? It's just lose that connection.
Well, you tend to hit the pause button, and you have depending on how far back you want to go. Why are we having Rath Yatra? Is having Rath Yatra pleasing to Krishna or not? And okay, if yes, and what's the yes? Because people that are, you know, in all phases or levels or stages of their spiritual advancement, starting with people that don't know anything about anything about Krishna, and then people that know something, and people that are more, you know, it's bringing, drawing people closer to Krishna. So that's what the event is, giving the mercy of Lord Jagannath to one and all. Let the downpour of mercy of Lord Jagannath fall upon all who attend Rath Yatra. It's pleasing to Lord Jagannath to give his mercy, and it's beneficial for those who receive his mercy. So that's why we have Rath Yatra. It's pleasing to him. And this is just one part of it. It's a small part, but it's part. So that people can sit comfortably rather than, you know, oh, it's hot, or I'm in the sun, or I have to sit on the ground, and I don't like to sit on the ground, or something. Make it comfortable. So they can receive Jagannath's mercy more peacefully. And they'll come again, and so on. Like, for example, Prabhupada speaking about having comfortable quarters for the Western disciples when they come to Mayapur. We don't need it. We need a tree. We did it. You know, we went where there wasn't anything. We just, you know, hand pumps to take our bath. But there were, in 3 days, it was a sea of mud. Because everyone was taking, you know, from a hand pump, taking their bath. You know, we don't know how to live like that. With us, like lots of people. So we had, I mean, there were rooms. When there are rooms that, where there's a zillion mosquitoes. And then people steal things through the window. That was going on. So we had to have rooms with screens and locks. You know, live in a comfortable way when, you know, it's nice to have austerity, but those that can't take the austerity, have it comfortable. So the mind can be peaceful and focus on the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and the kirtan and the message and so forth. So make it comfortable. Western accommodations, Prabhupada called it. Same in Vrindavan. Come to the land of Tapasya and have comfortable accommodations. So people can peacefully receive the mercy. So the chairs is, and Rath Yatra is just make things comfortable for people. Reasonably, you know, not extravagantly, but reasonable. So it's, that's the connect. Otherwise, we don't need to do it. Yeah.
And so, going by the first question that you were asking, that about action and the desire. So, it seems that question now doesn't come, because anyway we have to act. There is no escape from action. It's only we have to see whether we can connect the action to Krishna or not.
Are you referring to the discussion the first evening?
Right.
Okay.
So, and what I'm saying is the question becomes irrelevant for me, because whether I can just desire or whether I can just act, well, it's irrelevant, because I have to act anyway. Only thing is, can I connect to Krishna or not?
Well, beyond the philosophical question, on a practical level, or other than the philosophical question, on a practical level, what's my responsibility? And different than you, maybe some people that think, I don't have to put the chairs out at Rath Yatra, I just have to think and desire, let us have a nice Rath Yatra. No, there's an activity. I have to act. I'm sitting here meditating on. And, you know, a justification of one scriptural evidence of that is the brahmana that was offering, you know, making his puja in his mind. He didn't do anything. He was just doing puja in his mind. And
Krishna accepted it.
In his case, it was because he was elderly and he was unable.
But that's all he did, was he just desired to gather ingredients and make a nice dress and nice ornaments and flower garlands and just desiring that. So that's all I really need to do. I have to do something. That's all I need to do. That's it. And if I do anything else, it's just a desire and everything is being carried out by Krishna's reciprocating with that desire kind of thing. It's, you know, that matter moves because Krishna's moving matter, because I have a desire. So what's my role? What's my responsibility? Am I just to desire or am I to make some endeavor? That's the relevancy. What's our path? Are we on the right path? Are we supposed to be putting chairs up at Rath Yatra or just desiring? Which is it? I can make a choice of just desiring. Sit in my room and think about spreading Krishna consciousness to all the conditioned souls all over the world. Or do I need to make some endeavor? Is that a responsibility? And it's kind of obvious. But to some people, it was a lively debate. Since somebody that's not a lazy person, he's an active person, but you know, my role is, I just desire, and everything else is Krishna. Is it my responsibility to endeavor or not? Anyway. For you, it's a no-brainer. For some people, wait a minute. For me, the reason that I have an interest in it is I want to represent our Siddhanta properly. I don't want to just, I've got an idea what our Siddhanta is and just keep repeating it. And it, you know, I want to check with other brahmanas and learned personalities in scripture and make sure I'm representing our Siddhanta properly, because that's my responsibility. It's part of what I have to do as a teacher of our Siddhanta. I'm going to go on endeavoring too. No one, even if like Haridas Thakur said, you chop my body into a million little pieces, I'm going to still chant Hare Krishna, because that's coming from the soul. So endeavoring is something I'm going to do anyways. But part of my endeavor is representing the Siddhanta properly, because I don't want to like go off, you know, half a degree and then just keep going with that. I want to be right with what our Siddhanta is, because that's the position of protection and strength and purity. That's my concern. A deviation in Siddhanta is more detrimental than a deviation in regular principles or any other thing. The implication is pervasive. So, what's our Siddhanta? That's my concern. Anything else? Anyone? Yes.
If we look at this section of Bhagavatam, we talked about how the sages of Mahavishnu, they were interested to know what were the conversations between Maitreya and Vidura. Similarly, you know, various other instances where they wanted to know.
Sure.
It's not that they didn't know. They know. They knew the essence of the message, but still they wanted to hear. When I put myself, I'm seeing myself conversely, when I hear something.
When you hear something?
When I hear something or read something that I kind of know in essence, for example, any section. The essence is do devotional service.
Okay.
Part and parcel of Krishna.
Okay.
And
that's sufficient for you.
Yeah, internally what I'm thinking is, what's next? What is new? This is something that I already know, And my mind gets checked out. In between hearing or reading. And I conversely, I see how the sages are actually relishing that, even though they knew the same thing, that they're actually relishing.
Okay, I think I have your question. So you're making a statement. The question is,
how do I, you know, go
from the position where I am, how do I get to the position where the sages are? Well, a few things. One of them is relishing topics. There's ever new happiness, realization. It's not like chewing the chewed. It's not like, you know, the sugar cane that's already been, all the juice is out, and you take the sugar cane and chew on the sugar cane that's already, the juice is out. So what's the point of doing that? It's like some fresh sugar cane, please. It's not like that. It's those who are in an elevated position, they relish churning the topics, or, you know, the rasa that comes from Krishna Katha. There's a deeper and fundamental and profound happiness on the platform of the soul that comes from appreciating topics of Krishna, as opposed to a subject matter that I may try to conquer and, you know, learn about this, and then comes what's next. Mastering, you know, how many times do I have to hear 2 + 2 = 4? Okay, what's next? In the chain of ascending knowledge. This isn't ascending knowledge, it's topics in relation to Krishna, in which the happiness is within the topic itself, newer and newer and newer and newer. Realization and happiness and contact with Krishna. So, I'm saying here, the paradigm shift is from ascending knowledge to descending knowledge. There's more to be understood than what you or I or any of us understand, just even in the knowledge side. That's one thing. The realizations will ever increase as the topic is churned and discussed further. The rasa that one can experience, the attraction for Krishna, love for Krishna, the happiness in a relationship with Krishna will grow similarly. And then a third is the further the flimsiness of sentiment and establishing instead the deep roots of knowledge, so that when some challenge comes or the wind comes, you don't fall over. Your roots have gone deep and far and wide, so that in the Uttama Adhikari stage, in the Kanishta Adhikari stage, one's faith is soft and pliable. In the intermediate stage, Madhyama stage, one's faith is strong, nishtha. But although I may not have an understanding of all the explanations within scripture, someone may present some other point of view or some challenge that I may not know, my faith is strong. And the Uttama Adhikari, in any situation that comes, very clearly I know the scriptural conclusion, and I can state the scriptural conclusion and, you know, convince the other party, but to speak of my faith isn't shaken. So I then can become, in other words, a better instrument for assisting others in coming to the stage of faith, where they don't know at all. In fact, they may be faithless. So what's going to convince the faithless to become faithful? I can be an instrument in Krishna's hand to help. And, you know, become unshakable. position in service to Krishna. Although I got it down, yeah, I got to serve Krishna. There are not only moments, but there are a large part of our life is something else besides service to Krishna, where we think things, behave in certain ways that not service to Krishna, although I know I'm supposed to serve Krishna. We just have our way of doing other things too. So much for Krishna, so much for me, although I know devotional service. So as I continue the process of hearing, it makes my fixed position stronger, unchanging, unswerving. Like time, like the use of time. And you know, this whole topic of time wasting. And we can talk about we shouldn't waste time, we shouldn't do whatever the time wasters are. Internet browsing and stuff. And stuff, yeah, we all have some time wasting things. Whatever the news and just frivolous stuff. And it's time wasting. It's kunjara sotara. We purify ourselves through devotional service and then we throw dust and dirt on ourselves. So we can hear about it, but we just continue. Although we know devotional service. We're not going to advance. In a way that we could advance if we let go of those things. So what's going to help us let go of those things? Grow the root of devotional service stronger by hearing from different angles of vision and perspectives on that subject matter. It will strengthen my devotional service. Okay? Something?
Talking about the time energy, it's not directly related, but I had a question. They're talking about, like, according to the Maya calendar, how the 13th annulation, 1221, according to the Maya calendar.
The Mayan calendar?
Yeah. December 21st, there's going to be.
Okay. She had extra rounds that morning. Hare Krishna.
But what's our responsibility?
Zero. I don't have an answer for that. I don't pay attention to it, period. My responsibility is I don't pay attention to it. I go on with devotional service. You know, the dogs may bark, but the caravan will pass kind of thing. Don't pay attention to it. Woof, woof. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.